Hey, Heath.
Hey there, Jimerson. All right. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to the Crux Capacitor. You heard my little exchange here with Jimerson Diaz. He is my guest for today. And I just want to say thank you very much for being on the podcast today and welcome.
Thank you so much, Heath. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me here.
I'm absolutely thrilled about it, actually. So Jimerson and I met on the app called Shaper. That's Shapr. That's a networking app or a spectrum building, for the lack of a better way to put it. It puts you in touch with people that normally wouldn't be in your typical circle. You are located in, are you out in San Jose, California? Is that where you're at?
Yes, I am. San Jose, Silicon Valley area.
Silicon Valley. And then obviously my listeners know that I am in Charlotte, North Carolina. So anyways, we are cross country today. We're doing both coasts at the same time. So that's pretty cool. Awesome. And really quickly, before we jump into our topic at hand today, we want to focus on mental health today. Jimerson actually has a unique perspective on that. We talk about core values on this broadcast, Jimerson, and your core values have been shaped a lot by your actual experiences in life. Kind of talk to us a little bit about, if you can, about how your core values were shaped by your own mental health issues.
Sure. So I'm diagnosed with bipolar as well as PTSD, which is post-traumatic stress disorder. After high school, I joined the military, I joined the Marine Corps, and after one tour in Iraq, I started to have these symptoms to where I believe that I was this being sent by God called Hope to save the world by spreading hope, faith, and love everywhere that I went. And one day we had gone to the armory, we had to gather our weapons, and I had to make a decision on whether or not I was going to stay in the military, be this being that I thought I was. And ended up getting into my car. I ran through three or four stop signs. I ended up crashing into a few police vehicles, got arrested, was brought over to the emergency hospital, and I was deemed that I was having a manic episode. I was brought from the Mojave Desert over to San Diego Balboa, where I was had my first hospitalization, and I was diagnosed with bipolar 1. I was put on medication, and I had quite a few hospitalizations since then, a couple of suicide attempts, and what's called a 5150, where I had to be held involuntarily for my safety as well as the safety of others. And these are due to mainly through having bipolar and a little bit of having PTSD, and mainly because it was untreated up until I was about 20 years old. And really what that is it's a medical imbalance in the brain. It's a medical condition that could be treated and probably should have been treated a long time ago. But due to my lack of knowledge of, I wasn't educated on mental health. And since I didn't get that care earlier, manifested later on. And
yeah,
I had to, I had to pretty much deal with it years later. Right.
So first of all, as I've said before in our pre-interview that we do with all of our candidates, that I really appreciate your candor and your being vulnerable like that and sharing like that. But you're not alone is what I see and I read a lot of times is that, you know, military experiences, especially for young men who are dealing with PTSD that don't even know they're dealing with PTSD. Right. And then dealing with the stress of military life at times. A lot of times it will bring things like this to the surface. So you certainly weren't alone in that.
No.
Yeah. So did you see more instances of that? And you talked to me a little bit about how you see more and more instances of the mental illness coming to the surface that's not being treated.
Yes. Well, according to statistics that we know of, one out of four, one out of five people are dealing with a mental health condition. One out of 25 people have a serious mental health condition, and we're talking about bipolar or schizophrenia, major depression or schizoaffective disorder. But how these really, my experiences on how it shaped my values specifically is religiously, like I've been a lot more it strengthened my faith significantly, having had the experiences that I've gone through. It's really helped me understand that God does exist and there is a creator, and it makes a lot of sense, that there was a creator instead of things just popping out of nowhere.
Right, and sometimes though we talk about the fact that life doesn't make sense through mental episodes and through trials or the challenges that lie with mental health. Now, I mean, there's so many different ways to actually approach this, but you yourself, you'd actually, even though you've gone through each one of these episodes and you've had the multiple hospitalizations and you've had the different, what have probably been labeled as psychotic episodes, just because you were dealing with your own safety as well as the safety of others. And one of the very first things that I actually thought of when you said to me, you said, you had this idea of grandeur, as you said, when you were hope and you were here to spread love and peace and all those good things, which is interesting enough because, that certainly doesn't seem like the worst thing in the world to want to spread love and peace and everything like that.
No,
But,
no.
one of the things that you've taken away from this, and I'm sure it's a daily renewal thing. I'm surely it's a daily challenge where you actually have to kind of recommit to this. But you talk about a lot about your self-identity. Speak to
Yes.
that a little bit. Speak to how self-identity, your self-identity has been become a key core value to you throughout all this.
So it's just been through a whole lot of different experience that I've gone through, but knowing who we are has just been a super big thing to me. Not losing myself, not because I felt that that's something that I've lost before. I've compromised who I was in the past. And I've realized that I just can't do that. It's too significant to lose. And my self-identity comes with being a continual servant of God
Right.
is the number one thing, because I feel that I truly believe that God knows more than any of us do, and he definitely knows more than I do. So if I put my trust in God, I know that he'll provide me with everything I need, including my self-identity, including my mission in life, including what I'm meant to do with my time, and how to spend quality time with the people that are meaningful towards me. So being a continual servant of God, serving man, serving the causes that I believe in, as well as having a strong sense of self-worth and self continually learning about myself, learning about the journey that I go through. So I'm in this stage right now where just developing myself, having a stronger relationship with myself as well as with God, is extremely important to me, and that's where I'm at with my self-identity, and at least that's where I'm at right now.
And that's what we said before in our conversation before that self-identity right now may not be what it is tomorrow, but it's what it is what it is today, and it isn't what it was yesterday. So, exactly. So,
Yes,
okay.
definitely.
Well, Jimerson, I'm going to ask you to stay tuned and come right back here with me. We're going to go ahead and take a station break. You've been listening to the Crux Capacitor, and we'll be right back.
Hey, listeners, are you newly engaged and looking for the perfect wedding officiant? Well, you've literally been listening to him for the last few minutes. That's right. Heath, the host of the Crux Capacitor, is a licensed and ordained minister that performs weddings in the Charlotte, North Carolina metro area. Go to nuptiallyyours.com or call 614-561-9681. That's nuptiallyyours.com or 614-561-9681 for more information. Let Nuptially Yours and Heath make sure you're nuptially ready for your big day.
Okay. Well, welcome back, everybody, to the Crux Capacitor. I am Heath Wiggins, your host, and my special guest today is Jimerson Diaz. Jimerson, thank you so much again for being with us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So we've been talking about mental health. And one of the things that we were on the verge of talking, and because of your own personal experience with mental health and your self-identity that has become so much a part of your core values and how you strive to maintain that through service to man and service to God, both. Service to man for you has come about in the form of really working on helping people disassociate the stigma that we place on mental health with the actual process of becoming mentally healthy. Correct. So you right now, in your role, you actually right now are a mental health advocate, and you do that with an organization out there in the Bay Area.
Yes.
Do you want to identify that organization?
It's called the National Alliance on Mental Illness. It's actually the largest nonprofit organization that's dedicated to mental health right now, mental health condition. And but yes, my big thing that I really want to focus on is talking about is really focusing on the brain and separating the brain from the person. But We as human beings, our brains make up 99.99% of the, if you can imagine the body, we could cut off or transplant any part of the body, but if we cut off a piece of the brain, we lose who we are. We could lose certain memories, or we lose our certain personalities, or whatever it may be. And unfortunately, we're not giving the attention to the brain as much as we need in comparison to the attention that we already give to our bodies. We give so much attention to our appearance, to our, like our teeth, or our hands, our hair. Not saying that that's not important. Those are very important parts to ourselves. What's a lot more important is taking care of the brain, that is the makeup of the majority of who we are. And when and brains, just like any part of the body, could have a medical condition to it whenever it's put under too much stress, or it's put under too much pressure, or it's not getting enough rest, or whatever reason it may be. But if it's not in the proper conditions, it could be it could get hurt, it could get damaged. So if you could imagine if you could imagine the brain having little arms and little legs, and it was climbing Mount Everest, or if it was running a marathon, if it was doing something arduous, if it were to fall down and get hurt, it would need a team to go out there and to help repair the little broken leg or whatever it may be, in order for it to get back on its feet and to start moving again. Unfortunately, what we're doing is, when the brain is acting up, and let's say it falls down and gets a broken leg, instead of saying, team to go out and help it, through stigma and prejudice, what we have on mental health conditions, we go out and takes up the supplies away from that brain. We don't give it the medical attention it needs. So this manifests in, for example, if somebody has anxiety or depression, and if they're in school or if they're at work, instead of giving them the support that they need, the access that they need to the help that they need. Instead, we're going out there, we'll put the person down, we'll say, hey, you just need to change how you're feeling, or you need to fix yourself, you need to just go take a walk around the block, and we don't, we're not understanding that the brain is in a condition that truly does need medical attention at that time. And
right,
we can't just say, hey, just get up and walk it off. But if it has a broken leg, it's not going to be able to do that at that time. It needs to get better.
Right. And so one of the things that you've been so passionate about, though, is that you believe that your treatment for what you have been had been going through and still do go through was way too delayed. Basically, people weren't able to read the signs because they weren't educated enough. They weren't prepared enough to help you. But you are wanting to actually now strike at the heart of that lack of preparation. You are going into schools, right? That's one of the things you do as a mental health advocate.
Yes. Yes. That's something I really want to help with the most, because half of those who have medical conditions that are mental health related, they 14, that's a freshman in high school, things tend to start up. I started feeling my symptoms, honestly, when I was a senior in high school, and I was acting drastically different from how I was when I was a freshman, sophomore, and junior. And a lot of people knew that I was acting strange, and it was apparent to me as well. But I had no idea that that was a medical condition. I had no idea it was a mental health condition. And I really want to speak to the younger generations now, because it's going to show up. Because of all the change in the hormones, and their brains are changing, their bodies are changing, it means it's more likely they're going to, at times, along with the pressure and the stress that they're going through, they're going to have medical conditions all throughout their bodies, including their brains. And they have to, in order for them to prevent years of unnecessary stress, and these things could ruin relationships, it could ruin their education, could ruin their careers, because when the brain is unstable, their behavior is going to be unstable, and their results are going to be truly unstable. It could be, some could be dangerous, some could be self-harm, and some could be, sometimes when a person's behavior is so off that it could be so disruptive around their environment, they will be taken out of whatever institution they're in, whether it be an educational institution or if it's in a work setting. So the earlier that they do get treatment and they get the proper treatment early on, then they'll be able to live a fulfilling life much earlier, instead of having to go through a roller coaster throughout their lives, finding out the hard way. And people really shouldn't have to go through all that. It's a very dangerous route, and it's not worth like saving pride over or
right.
anything like that.
Right. So you bring up a very interesting aspect here, and something I haven't even entertained until we actually were talking now. And I didn't even think about this when we were having our pre-interview, but one of the things that I have felt very strongly about, and I'm sure from a military perspective, you have a very interesting perspective. But you know, one of the things that we talk about now is mental health for young people when it comes to these school shootings.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And how there seems to be so much going on with the mental health of the young person that they are not given the tools or don't know how to use the tools yet because of their immaturity. Not only are they immature, but then they're mentally unstable as well. Right. So they're not, their anger or their anxiety or the things like that does not have a proper expression. And so it comes out in violence. I personally have started speaking up more and more on the fact that we need more than guidance counselors when it comes to students. We need mental health counselors. Everybody, in my opinion, and this is just my public personal opinion that I'm putting out there, everybody should have some sort of therapeutic means of support. Whether that means somebody being in therapy or, like, again, a therapeutic activity, you know, we all relate differently in that sense. We're all wired differently. But therapy is one of those things that we just all need. It's just not all of us go to a therapist every week or every other week to share that.
Yes.
But from your perspective, though, from the military perspective and your own episodes and everything like that, what are you seeing when you go into these classrooms and things like that? What are you seeing as far as the response to the school violence that they see in different schools?
Yes, that's definitely quite a subject. The reality is when it comes to people who have mental health conditions, the great majority of them are not looking to harm a lot of people. And unfortunately, there's been like that paintbrush effect of when somebody has somebody is showing signs of, like, okay, there's one person who had a mental health condition, and then they killed a whole lot of people. That's a horrible event. Nobody wants that to happen, but the great majority of people who do have mental health conditions are really trying to focus on getting back on their feet, trying to get themselves together. It's just like that little brain that's still trying to climb the mountain. If it has a broken leg, it doesn't really care about other people climbing the mountain too. It's trying to get better itself and trying to live with its life. That's the majority of people who have mental health conditions. They're trying to they're trying to, one, find hope to live, or two, they're trying to just get by and survive. And sometimes if they could feel a little bit better, they think they could help others as well. That's the majority of that I've seen. Those who there has been a main profile of those who are conducting the school shootings, and those are individuals who are who really obsess over weapons, who obsess over guns as well as and knives, and they have history of, like, animal torture, and not showing a whole lot of not showing empathy towards other people and towards other creatures, and that's I forgot what the name of it is, but a very sadistic type of thinking is the main profile when it comes to individuals like that. There is a mental health condition for that, but it's that's definitely not the majority of those who have mental health conditions in my experience.
And of course that can contribute again to a greater stigma, because as soon as we start talking about, okay, this person obviously has mental health issues, which, again, we should be talking mental health, and we should be talking about all the circumstances and things that surround this. But at the same time, you can't paint everybody into that exact same picture. And so, but at the same time, if we were, as you said, the 14 age mark, the freshman mark, if we were cutting things off at the pass with active therapeutic understanding or therapeutic activities for these young people, we might be heading off some of this, maybe not all of it, but we might be heading off some of, well, even as you put it yourself, not only the violence, but the association that suicide is a gainful way out, for lack of a better way to put it. And something like that. And you've said you've seen an increase of that in the schools.
The high school students that are going through school now are going through, like, a great number of pressure now in comparison to before. Like, at least 10, 20, 30 times more difficult now. I was, at least here in the Silicon Valley, I was speaking to a sophomore in high school, and she told me that this past May, 40 seniors were valedictorians, 4-0. And that's wow, ridiculously high in comparison, yeah, to, I think we had one or two valedictorians when I was going through high school, right, in the same area. And so that means ever since that they were a freshman up until a senior, they were getting straight A's all the way in six of their classes, all the way up until senior year. And on top of that, that means they have to take honors classes, AP classes, extracurricular activities. They have to learn different languages. They're more stressed than 99% of adults nowadays. Like, they shouldn't be going through that kind of stress. They're kids. They're 15 years old. They should be having fun. And another thing is that their parents know exactly where they are all the time. They have certain apps nowadays on their smartphones where they could see their exact location at all times. So if you can imagine your parents watching over you all the time, and they know whether or not you went to class on time, mm-hmm, or if you showed up late. If you showed, mm-hmm, up late, they would know before you came home, because there are applications that parents have access to know whether or not you came late to school, or you came late to a certain class, or, mm-hmm, when you turn in a quiz, they know what that grade is by the time the kid gets home. So all that stress is on them all the time. So a lot of them aren't really having fun in school anymore. It's a really arduous task on their brains and their emotions and their moods and their thoughts. And so suicide has become that plenty of suicidal ideation that's not too far away from a solution into some of their minds, because of all the stress that they're going through. And it's really unfortunate that they have to face all that right now. I mean,
yeah. So what we're dealing with then is we're dealing with a society that places huge emphasis on performance rather than huge emphasis on identity.
Yes.
And then the already predisposition to any mental health issues can be stretched, and yeah, and then the tendencies that we've just been talking about can surface. Mm-hmm. So we've been talking to Jemerson Diaz about mental health and his role as a mental health advocate. We're going to have Jemerson come back for one more segment here in just a couple minutes, and we're going to talk about current issues, a very interesting perspective, again, talking a little bit more about suicide. Please stay tuned. You've been listening to The Crux Capacitor.
No, your ears aren't playing tricks on you, and yes, that really is Christmas music you're listening to. But stay with me, because I really do have a point. Now, I realize that not everybody stays in the Christmas spirit all year long like myself. You may not wake up, hop in the shower, and sing Joy to the World at the top of your lungs instead of some top 10 bubblegum pop ballad, but that doesn't mean you don't like giving gifts. In fact, if you're all grown up, you've probably realized the great transition from receiving to giving gifts. And that's what Christmas any time of the year means for you. Or at least I hope it does. And I hope it does because Heath Wiggins, that's me, and the Crux Capacitor are working on bringing you gifts that speak to the heart through our new Shopify store called Porter's Emporium. You really can grow up and still believe in Santa Claus. You just get to believe that you are Santa Claus. Please stay tuned for more information right here on The Crux Capacitor. Remember, that's Porter's Emporium, the gift of the Magi all year long. And now, back to our show.
Okay, we are back with Jimerson Diaz, and everybody, this is The Crux Capacitor, a podcast about core values. I'm your host, Heath Wiggins, and we're glad you're listening today. So, Jimerson, we've been talking about Mental Health Day. Not an easy subject to talk about, but definitely a needed subject in our current society, as we've talked a lot about. So current issues, this is a kind of veers off the beaten path, but it really comes back exactly what we've been talking about today. The most recent, very current issue, all over forms of social media, forms of media, magazines, newspapers, etc., has been the suicide of designer Kate Spade.
Yes.
And Kate left a note to her 14-year-old daughter. Interestingly enough, going back to the 14 age when she might be having her own, misgivings about mental health and things like that, but saying that it wasn't her fault, but then citing issues as far as relationships are concerned. Mm-hmm. You said you have an interesting perspective on this, as far as you yourself have had.
Yes. I've had overall like two suicide attempts, but the last suicide attempt that I did have, it was in relation to a toxic relationship that I was having, and also due to the fact that I have a couple of mental health conditions. But that it really does hit a core when it comes to having that toxic relationship. And also, this is where my strong value of a self-identity comes in. Because in that relationship, this is just my story, but instead of putting my trust and in myself and the things that I invest myself in, instead of investing myself into God, and something that I've been doing for a majority of my life, this person that I was with, I started to invest all of myself and my trust in her.
Mm-hmm.
And everything, when things went well in the relationship, my life went well. And when things went sour, when things went south in the relationship, my life went bad and it went south, and it felt like there was no hope in the world. And it would go up and down and up and down. And when things were, eventually it didn't work out. And there was a time when my symptoms were really acting up, and the relationship wasn't going well, it felt that I had no purpose in life. It felt like I had no hope. And when going through those times, it's very difficult to see a tomorrow. It's difficult to see what's the point in living another day, another month, if the things that I believe at the time so strongly that were meant the world to me has been shattered.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that I've invested in has been destroyed for whatever reason. So what I did was I took my pills in the kitchen where my family was, and like that following night they had to take me over to the hospital in order to make sure I didn't die. But
right.
So I could relate in a way of how hopeless it truly does feel at that moment. And through this relationship, although it was a extremely toxic relationship and it wasn't beneficial, what did benefit me the most was how it really helped me understand how important my self-identity is, because I lost myself in another person. And I learned that when you put yourself, when you put your trust and your love and your hope into a person or into like the world, those things are going to change. So a person dies in the future. A person doesn't last forever. The world doesn't last forever. But what I know in my heart is that God does. He's been from everlasting to everlasting. God is all knowing. And so it would make sense for me to put my trust in God and not in myself or not in any other person or in the world, because those things are just temporary. And when things, if I put all things in the basket is subject to, then that's what it was. And it felt like there was no point. So it was a learning experience for me to never, ever compromise my self-identity, who I was, and to put all of my being into any person or anything that's temporary. And that's something and that's where my strong value of self-identity has really developed.
So I think, though, one of the things that you point out and that we have to recognize, too, when going on and dealing with that self-identity, though, is like you said, though, is sometimes your perspective, especially due to the mental health issues. And I'm not saying yours specifically, I'm saying in general, if somebody is dealing with something that they feel is very dark when it comes to a relationship, they don't see that tomorrow that you've said, it's completely black right in front of their face and they're not seeing anything. And that is what a mind that has, as you said, a broken leg does. If your mind is not mobile, if it's not able to move, then that's exactly what you see. You see a blank space or a black space, unfortunately, right in front of you.
Yes.
So, anyways. Well, Jefferson, I tell you what, we have had a longer than normal podcast, but I really do appreciate you actually just sharing your heart, coming on, talking about what we call the crux of the matter. I hope that you'll come back, that you'll be a guest again sometime. I'd love to hear more about what you're doing. I do know right now, and I'm going to basically share some of how they can get a hold of you, how they can follow you online.
Okay.
But I know you are doing something, and I need you to do it just as brief as possible. Talk really quickly about the millennial, 15,000 millennial campaign, as well as the $5 million campaign.
Yeah, so basically our vision is to change the perspective on how we see illness and September 22nd. And goal, get millennials involved.
Okay.
By having 15,000 millennials.
Okay. Really quickly, you were fading in and out there. I was wondering, we were having some signal issues. I apologize about that. So your recording wasn't coming through really clearly. Just make sure. Are you near the Wi-Fi? You're good with Wi-Fi signal?
Yes, I am.
Okay. All right. Let's try that again. We'll go back to the millennials, the 15,000 millennials.
Okay. Yes, so our vision is just to change the perspective on how we see accessing mental health care, especially at an early age. So we want millennials to really demand this change and to make a big impact. So we're going to raise $5 million towards mental health awareness and education and get 15,000 millennials to walk the day of the NAMI walk to show that we have a presence in this.
Okay. Well, that's awesome. So if you want to follow or get in touch with Jefferson, you can do Facebook. You just look for Jefferson Diaz, spelled, the last name is spelled D-I-A-Z, excuse me. Boy, that didn't come out right. And then Instagram is at J3MERSON. So Jefferson spelled with a three in there. And if anybody wants to, reach out to him via me to get his email or anything like that, you can do that by just emailing me at heath@heathwiggins.com. Also, please, if you haven't done so already, make sure and like the Facebook page for the Crux Capacitor. It is facebook.com/CruxCapacitorPodcast. And then you also can find us on Instagram at the_crux_capacitor, or you can follow me on Twitter at Heath Wiggins Co. So that's Heath Wiggins Co. On Twitter. All right, Jimerson, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. And we look forward to having you back in the future.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
Appreciate it. All right.